Hello and welcome to episode 83 of the Pure Tokyo Scope podcast. I am Patrick Macias, the author of the brand new book, Mondo Tokyo.
And I'm Matt Ault, author of the not so new, but equally awesome book, Pure Invention, How Japan Made the Modern World. Well, this is kind of a moment for Japan, is it not right now, Patrick?
The world is shaking. I feel the earth move under my feet, Matt. Some momentous things have happened in Japanese pop culture the last few days, not the least of which was the Academy Award wins for Hayao Miyazaki and Godzilla Minus One. There was a death in the family.
Yes. So the Oscars were a high point, but what we're about to talk about was most definitely a low point and a low blow even, because it was unexpected. The mangaka Akira Toriyama of Dr. Slump fame, of Dragon Ball, Dragon Ball Z fame, of Dragon Quest art fame, passed away suddenly, unexpectedly, of a brain aneurysm type situation. I forget what the exact medical term is, on March 1st. And then his family only announced it a Friday, a week later, after the funeral had been held, because obviously they didn't want to be disturbed during their time of grief. But it ushered in this insane wave of grief online and really all over the world. I'm sure you saw it too.
There were national days of mourning declared in Mexico and El Salvador. You had like China issuing official statements mourning the passing.
Argentinians took to the streets. They're like chanting Akira, Akira. They're like chanting his name in the streets.
The Lisbon soccer team is all wearing like Super Saiyan wigs and stuff. It's like, it's crazy. My feed just went like insane with like insane images of people like running around all over the globe wearing Dragon Ball Z cosplay. It was bananas.
You know, this is going to sound a little hyperbolic, but I think it's true. In Japan, like, manga is like the rock of Japan, right? The rock and roll. And the passing of Akira Toriyama is the equivalent of some beloved rock star like a Jimi Hendrix or somebody like that passing away and you realizing just like how much you've lost.
Oh, yeah. I know that feeling because I felt that last year when Leiji Matsumoto died. And like, yeah, that was a big blow to me personally. Like, you know, so attached to his work from childhood. It meant so much to me. I don't really have that for Toriyama's work as much, but I realize that like about 5 billion people besides me do. And that's maybe the point.
Well,
here.
Sure. You know, I actually grew up on Dr. Slump. I think a Japanese friend had, you know, copies of the Tankobon. And my friends and I, who couldn't read Japanese at the time, were just obsessed with it because, and like, I think it's really, needs to be said here, most people in the West associate Toriyama with Dragon Ball. And, you know, it's a huge franchise, whatever. But before that, he was already a rock star. Dr. Slump was the biggest manga of like the 1980 to 1984 timeframe. It was unbeatable. It was huge. And it had this insane mix of like scatological humor and really amazing, amazing draftsmanship. Every episode was kind of like the Daikon film anime with like constant nonstop pop culture references. There's kaiju in there. There's like a Superman character. There's like Star Wars things.
What it felt like to me he did is he kind of like Mad Magazine'd manga. You know, like this Japanese pop culture behemoth had been in play for like 30 years since like the 50s. It was finally time for someone to start playing around with Godzilla, playing around with Ultraman. Like
to me, it speaks to this kind of growing pride in Japan's pop culture among the people who were raised on it. Like they didn't see what they were creating, like Godzilla movies. They didn't see them as cheesy compared to Hollywood movies like so many Westerners did. They didn't see their cartoons as low budget compared to the West like so many people did. They saw them as the equal or even better then. And so they could put all of these kind of references in and have fun with them and stuff.
Yeah, it was kind of like the fans making their own material with the stuff they grew up and loved. So yeah, it was a big, big seismic shift, I think, in manga. When you look at Fred Schott's manga, you know, the kind of that first great history book about manga, there's a little bit about Dr. Slump in there as like a popular comic. But really, that era kind of ends right there. Manga being forged by like those really great tiki heads like Osamu Tezuka, Ishinomori, like those guys who grew up in the post-war era.
Yes.
This new generation, younger creators like Toriyama, taking inspiration from their works and pushing manga in new directions. And I don't think Toriyama was like a revolutionary manga creator the way those guys were, but he was revolutionary in the sense of how gosh darn popular those works were.
I think what you're kind of nibbling around the edges on here is that to me, Go Nagai, Matsumoto Reiji, you know, those people were very much auteurs. Toriyama worked very closely with Jump editors, and one editor in particular who really shaped his narratives and storytelling. Like, for instance, Dr. Slump is called Dr. Slump because Toriyama thought that old, you know, lecherous dude who invented Agare-chan, the little cyborg girl, android girl, was the hero. But the editor quickly realized that no, it has to all be about the little girl. Like, Toriyama was about to write her out of the series. Like, he wanted to make the whole thing about Norimaki Senbei, the hero of Dr. Slump, making new robots and stuff every episode. It quickly became all about Agare, the little girl. And in fact, the anime is titled Agare-chan. It's not entitled Dr. Slump. So there's that kind of super, super focused jump editorial power, you know, these veteran editors who kind of really have a sense for what the market wants. And that led directly into Dragon Ball, because I have read, and I really want to do a deeper dive on this, the editor, and consider the fact that Toriyama was already like a huge, very wealthy man by this point. The editor made him draw and redraw the intro to Dragon Ball over and over again, the very first one, until he nailed it just right. So it was like this very produced sort of situation. And it's kind of, to me, Dr. Slump and Dragon Ball are the rise of Shonen Jump. That's really what it's about, even more than the manga.
Again, I was saying that I feel like Toriyama's a revolutionary because Dragon Ball was just so popular. Dragon Ball Z, when it aired on the Cartoon Network, like starting in the late 1990s, it opened the door to all of these people who didn't look like the people who were watching anime before that. You suddenly had like hoes, pimps, players, Mexicans, gangsters, all these guys showing up at the party who were like huge fans of Dragon Ball. The polyester shirt, they called it the club shirt, you know, the button up tacky Super Saiyan shirt. I mean, right. Like that look, I became kind of normalized. Things that you would only see people do at anime con suddenly doing when they wanted to make love in the club, I guess.
Well, I certainly don't think that you would have seen the anime boom of the 90s without Dragon Ball. It was absolutely the fuel on that fire. So, and then Toriyama's like, he did so many other things as well. Like, you know, the poop emoji is indirectly credited to him by a lot of the people in the emoji industry, because like Agare-chan in Dr. Slump had this running gag where she'd pick up a coil of poop on a stick and like run after other characters with it. And that poop had like a little smile on it. Like it was like, hey, you know? So like that obviously inspired the emoji people a decade later. And I've actually heard this from emoji architects. And then of course, Dragon Quest. So he had this massive impact on video games too. You know, his illustrations that made the Dragon Quest RPG series on the Famicom popular. If you look at the Famicom game, which I'm sure you have, it looks like a bunch of like really crude scribbles on the screen. It's his box art that really made it awesome, and his character designs.
I was working at Viz Media when they launched Shonen Jump USA, and I saw this kind of like lightning bolt happen when like the synergy between Dragon Ball Z on the Cartoon Network, the manga suddenly being in play, all of these people like rushing into anime. There was like three big lightning rods. It was like Sailor Moon, Dragon Ball Z, and Pokemon, like really, really revolutionized the Japanese pop culture industry in America. And yeah, it really put Shonen Jump content on the menu. And that's how you get to things like this gradual succession of like Naruto, One Piece, Demon Slayer. Could it have happened without Dragon Ball Z in the West? I don't know.
I don't think so, because, you know, Dragon Ball Z is just, it has this kind of, and I will say this as somebody who is not a fan of Dragon Ball Z, and I don't mean that like I don't like it. It came out way after my time. Dragon Ball started when I was a kid, but unfortunately it wasn't available in English. And that Dragon Ball arc, it's kind of like a jokey Mad Magazine style retelling of the Chinese folktale / like proto novel Journey to the West. You know, that's a kind of self-contained narrative. And then it becomes Dragon Ball Z is this sort of like pro wrestling thing, right? They're just constantly like training to become stronger, fighting stronger and stronger villains.
And there's more science fiction now in the mix. You know, it's not just like a mythological retelling. Now there's like aliens.
The original Dragon Ball felt like kind of a Jackie Chan movie in a lot of ways. And there's that famous picture of Akira Toriyama and Jackie Chan together that you posted. Like he's very on the record as being like Hong Kong films inspiring him hugely. That mix. And Jackie Chan is an interesting comparison. He's really funny and silly, but he's insanely physically talented too. And the same thing is kind of true of Toriyama Akira.
Comedy and action, Matt. That's the magic formula. Maybe that's what it came down to in the end. I don't
exactly.
know.
Exactly. So just a guy who had an absolutely epic, outsized, insane impact on not only Japanese pop culture, but I think you can argue global pop culture.
Oh, for sure. No. And I think like what's really amazing to me is that like he's uncancelable. I mean, like Mr. Popo, maybe one of the most racist characters in anime and manga. And you have rappers on TikTok going, yo, we all know Mr. Popo, but I love Dragon Ball Z. It's right. Okay. He has like dirty scenes between like Bulma and Goku where she's like, look at my butt. You're 5 years old. And everyone's like, it's kind of funny. You know, that's the way things were back then. Like anyone else would just get canceled and killed for this kind of material. But he gets
he's too big to fail.
Too big to cancel.
No, it's true. And I, you know, it, for the record, I'm not calling for it or anything like that. It's just, it really was the way it was back then. And the kinds of jokes that he did in his manga might have been a little extreme, but they were absolutely part of the fabric of the manga world back then. It became even more so after the hit of Dr. Slump. So yeah, I think actually, as speaking as a 50-year-old, the fact that he passed away at 68 is a little bit sobering.
Oh my God. I saw this thing online where some Japanese person had done the math and like literally like if you're a mangaka, you live the on average 20 years less than like a normal human being.
Right. Well, famously, you know, and I think some fans in a dash of dark humor called it the otaku expiration date. Age 60 for a while there was the age at which mangaka checked out. Osamu Tezuka famously died then at that age. Ishinomori Shotaro died at that age. The Berserk guy died in his 50s. Like there's a lot of mangaka who died. You know, it's a sedentary lifestyle, and it's not only is it a sedentary lifestyle, it's highly stressful too, like making those deadlines. You got to manage your harem of assistants.
Your social media accounts, your TikTok, your Instagram.
And there's only one way that Mizuki Shigeru made it into his 90s, by not giving a damn, sleeping late every morning, never staying up late, and just doing whatever the hell he wanted. I wish more mangaka would adopt Mizuki Shigeru's of Gegege no Kitaro fame of his lifestyle. But then again, he survived World War II, so I guess that kind of gives you a little bit more perspective than somebody who was only raised on, like, you know, Starship Iskandar and, like, you know, the Macross, you know, crashing into the earth and all of that.
Yeah, I mean, this came out of nowhere. Toriyama was not seen as someone who was, you know, old and frail, or, you know, he was hard at work.
Yeah.
So it was a bolt of lightning. I guess like a day later, what is it, the voice actress for Chibi Mariko-chan passed away as well. So it
I didn't see that. That got subsumed in the kind of supernova of attention of around Akira Toriyama. Wow, how old was she?
She was in her 60s also. Yeah, right, I believe so. Right. Even though she's playing like a 5-year-old girl for like the last 30 years, she was like in her 60s.
Well, same thing for like Doraemon, all those actors too. You know, it's funny. There's all these Westerners who call themselves anime fans and, you know, good for you, whatever. But like, if you come to Japan, Chibi Mariko-chan is this incredibly popular anime, or at least it was in the 20th century. And it's just unknown abroad.
Well, it's like Sazae-san. It's one of those like standards.
It's like Doraemon, which is actually well known everywhere but America. Like if you consider yourself an anime fan, you absolutely need to watch Doraemon. You need to watch Chibi Mariko-chan. You need to watch Sazae-san. If you want to have conversations about anime with people in Japan who are not dyed-in-the-wool anime otaku.
Fun fact, recently I asked a Japanese person what their favorite anime is, and they said Paw Patrol.
Were they like, was he wearing a bib?
I'm going to say it was a woman in her 40s, Matt. Okay. That's all I'm going to say about that. And she was not joking. She was not being sarcastic. My sarcasm detector did not go off.
Hey, man, Paw Patrol deals with some really important issues in society today.
I haven't seen it, so maybe she's onto something. Maybe it is.
Actually, it's true. You know, I'm making fun of this. You know, the last conversation I had about Paw Patrol was with my cousin's wife. They have several kids who are like 3-4 years old. And like his wife was saying that she had inadvertently become a total expert on everything Paw Patrol because her 4-year-olds were just watching it nonstop. Paw Patrol is the Anpanman of the American cartoon oeuvre, wouldn't you say?
One time I did ask a 40-year-old otaku what his recent favorite anime is, and he said Scooby-Doo. Again, no sarcasm.
That's anime, man. Did you say that's actually limited animation? Hanna-Barbera-style limited animation? I'm not sure that I would consider that part of the anime.
Is this that debate where we go on Twitter and say, like, what is anime? Does it have to come from Japan? Is Scooby-Doo anime? Is Paw Patrol anime? I don't know.
Paw Patrol, that's my new favorite anime. I tell you what, I'm going to watch every episode and plus every episode of Bluey. Bluey is my favorite anime.
I don't know how many blunts I'd need to smoke to watch Bluey and Paw Patrol, Matt, but...
it's almost like cartoons are for kids, Patrick. Some of them are.
Well, some of them are, and again, some of them aren't. I mean, like, the amount of rappers, homies, whatever you want to call them, who came out
right
and paid respect to Akira Toriyama was really moving and really shocking. Not shocking, but it was just like everyone showed up for that one, man.
Well, and it seems like, you know, I think you can argue that this is a manifestation of Japan's soft power on the global stage. It's, you know, it's the fact that Japan is so loved as a country globally really is, I mean, there's many factors that are part of it, but the sheer popularity of things like Dragon Ball, which I think you can make an argument that Dragon Ball leads the pack, so to speak, of global anime. You know, you might be a Chainsaw Man fan. You might be like a Jujutsu Kaisen fan. You might be a Demon Slayer fan. But when it comes to just like global influence over time, don't you think Dragon Ball is it? Would you kind of agree with that?
Maybe there's a One Piece taqueria somewhere in Mexico. There's definitely several Son Goku taquerias. Yeah, Dragon Ball has been in play for like, you know, 40 years now or something like that. It's got a lot of heft behind it.
Yeah, it's wild. Most series that have that much, you know, length behind them in terms of history tend to get pretty stale. I'm not going to... Star Wars... but then again, Godzilla didn't. Godzilla's just now Godzilla's getting bigger than ever. So I don't know what it is. Japan's evergreen franchises. Maybe there's something to be learned there.
There was a picture someone posted on Twitter. My feed became like entirely like crazy Akira Toriyama-sized when he died. And there's a picture he drew. It says the caption, "This is me in paradise." The way he would draw himself is he's wearing like a gas mask.
Well, that he always drew himself that way. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that the gas face mask?
It is the gas face. Is he the fifth member of third base?
He says, it's a picture of him leaning over, reading a dirty magazine, smoking a cigarette, drinking a cola, eating nori senbei crackers with a model kit nearby.
It does sound like a little slice of heaven on earth, doesn't it?
I really hope he's got an infinite pile of dirty magazines in paradise right now.
R.I.P. to a true legend, Akira Toriyama, who passed away at the age of 68.
Hey, Vegeta.
What?
That's right. Action figures are now available from Irwin Toys, featuring a whole new line of Dragon Ball Z characters. Collect all your favorites. Now you can take Goku and the gang home with you and join in the excitement. Only Dragon Ball Z has this much action, this much excitement, this much fun. So get caught up in the Dragon Ball Z craze with action figures from Irwin Toys. Available now at fine stores everywhere. And have you checked out the Funimation website yet? What are you waiting for? It's where you can find all the latest in Dragon Ball Z merchandise, including t-shirts from Olaus, wall scrolls, and posters of your favorite characters, Dragon Ball Z trading cards, calendars, hats, and other apparel, as well as the latest in DVDs. Additionally, the Funimation website has the latest information on Dragon Ball Z news. Sign up for our fan club and you'll receive great discounts on Dragon Ball Z specials, such as our exclusive t-shirt offer, available now. So, sign on at www.funimation.net and be a part of our Dragon Ball team. Do it today.
But actually, you know, this leads into our next topic. Are we going to be talking about a certain book that's coming out?
Oh, a certain book? Yeah, the good book. Is that what they call
it? The good book?
Yes, Matt, my new book, Mondo Tokyo, Dispatches from a Secret Japan, dropped a few days ago in North America.
Is this the King James version of the book?
Depends if you're a Protestant or a Catholic, Matt. We can fight about this.
Just like in Shogun? Seriously, all joking aside, congratulations. This is an epic, epic achievement. And I have some thoughts on this book.
Uh-oh.
But I think we're going to save those because I want you to do a little soft shoe. You know, we're going to put you in the limelight. I want to hear about this book. Tell us about this book.
I would like to open with a quote from Hiroko Yoda from the back of the book. I think you know who she is.
Yes.
It says in large friendly letters,
"A book that hits with the power of Godzilla's roar, written by someone who isn't just a fan of Japan, but lived through a tempestuous time in otaku history. Patrick has a unique eye for unearthing long-buried gems from pop culture, and the skill to bring them to life for readers. I found myself surprised, charmed, and even laughing out loud at his wild journey. Mondo Tokyo is eye-opening and unforgettable." Hiroko Yoda, author of Yokai Attack, the Japanese monster survival guide.
That sounded just like my wife. I married an AI. No, Hiroko loved it.
If it's good enough for Hiroko Yoda, then it's good enough for everyone listening.
Hiroko's laughing because it's like Hiroko Yoda on top, and then like she's above Ryuhei Kitamura on the back of the book. You know, noted director, right? And then like Hiroko Yoda. She's a noted author.
And Ryuhei Kitamura says,
"More Japanese than Japanese. Patrick Macias is a man of passion. This is the great journey of a crazy gaijin that didn't get lost in translation. Mondo Tokyo was a deep dive into chaotic, cool, fun, and sexy subcultures of modern-day Japan. Ryuhei Kitamura, director of Versus and Godzilla Final Wars.
That sounds just like Ryuhei too.
Yeah, he made a Lost in Translation pun. Wow, I didn't expect that to happen. Yeah, am I a crazy gaijin, Matt?
You are. Are you a Dasai gaijin, to use a term from the book itself? Let me say this. I actually think this book is it should be seen as the Speed Tribes of our generation and era. And you might remember I think it was the 80s, this book called Speed Tribes came out, and it was talking about all these Japanese subcultures. The big difference being that it turned out Speed Tribes was entirely made up. Like, the guy spun it as fact. It's actually hugely, hugely fiction or hugely embellished. Your book, on the other hand, everything that happened in this book happened just like it happened in real life. Am I right?
Yeah, actually, I made up this guy called Sonny Chiba. I actually made up this guy called Tetsuro Tamba. They don't actually exist except in my imagination.
I really like it because it's a series of like kind of bite-sized episodes, you know, where one minute like Patrick is in this like, you know, dance club. Another, he's in this like boys' love. He's like battling maids in this like maid cafe, you know? So we should be upfront here. Another interesting thing about this is the time frame it's set in. There's a lot of books out there that deal with kind of the history of Japanese pop culture, like what's coming next, like the really cutting edge. This is set in the aughts and the teens, right?
Well, it's kind of a collection of like my greatest hits from my old blog from like 2005 with a lot of new stuff written recently. So it really covers this time span from like 2005 when I first started kind of living in Japan on and off, mostly on it back then, and right up to today. So there's a lot of stuff there that covers like an almost like a 20-year stretch of time, I guess. And so much went down. It's so bizarre. When you're living in that moment, it doesn't seem very weird, but now it's starting to look a little bit like a historical moment kind of happened there. And it's kind of a weird time to sort of look back and kind of reframe it as history that happened during that time, kind of the way otaku subculture didn't necessarily go mainstream, but kind of mutated in the digital age and became like real. Like Akihabara became like a real place that was sort of like a messy otaku's bedroom in real life.
Also, just sort of conceptually speaking, like, you know, in the bubble era Japan, you know, 1980s, Japan was like ascendant. 1990s, suddenly that bubble popped and it seemed like Japan was irrelevant, but it really wasn't. It was just new things were happening. Similarly, right before your book is the first episodes, or the first chapters in your book start, Japan had emerged as this huge pop cultural machine. You know, Miyazaki Hayao winning the Oscars in 2001 for Spirited Away. I mean, the Wachowski siblings are making anime, you know, versions of their hit Matrix films. There's Kill Bill. And then all of a sudden, boom, bam, bing, boom, bing, bang, foom. Japan is not relevant anymore around 2006-07.
Wait, you're forgetting about the 47 Ronin remake with Keanu Reeves, Matt.
Yes. The noted historical... It is a moment in history. Was that a sad Keanu movie or was it a happy Keanu?
I literally don't think anyone has ever seen it, so I can't really say for sure.
Your book kind of picks up the pieces of this Japanese pop cultural bust in a certain sense and shows how it's continuing in Japan and evolving into really wild and new forms. You know, you have the robot restaurant in there, right?
Robot restaurant is in there. Yeah. I mean, it was really sad because a lot of the chapters had to be updated with postscripts before they went to press. So many places closed during the pandemic. So many things were just like wiped out because of the pandemic.
Totally.
RIP robot restaurant. It's now the samurai restaurant.
Well, if I have any complaint about the book, it's why didn't you keep those places open, Patrick? Yeah, that's a kind of bummer. But you know, if your entire focus is just like on writing a tourist guidebook, you know, then all of this stuff would have not been written about. It wouldn't have been included. It's important to document it. The robot restaurant belongs in a museum, Patrick. But what are some of your favorite episodes from there? Top secret episodes?
I finally got to tell the story of the time me and Takashi Miike did a home invasion on Tetsuro Tamba's house. That's something I'd been sitting on for like a long time and never really had the chance. I always was saving it for a rainy day, and I thought it's now or never. So yeah, it's a long story. Also, there's a similar story about how we invaded Leiji Matsumoto's house with Tim Eldred and some anime fans and got to hang out with my personal favorite manga anime creator of all time. So I like those where I'm sort of like, it happened, you know, and I can finally tell those stories that I was holding on to for like, in some cases, 20 years.
I know that you wrote a lot of these entries on your blog or essays when you were still visiting Japan, but you've been living here for quite some time, and the book really feels like something that was written by somebody who lives in Japan. It doesn't feel like a parachute journalist.
Well, thanks for saying that. Yeah. I mean, I'm really curious how my own perspective has changed since I started living here. I mean, I think I figured out the whole recycling thing. So is it burnables on Monday?
Well, I thought you meant going to book off Hard Off and the dangerously named Liquor Off. But, you know, you can recycle things there too, you know. You should just don't take your garbage there.
I just don't know what I'm going to do next. I mean, there's endless opportunity to go out there and discover new things, people, places, and things. But yeah, when you start living here, you start to sort of, you know, the daily grind sort of starts to kind of make things seem a little less magical or something. When you visit only for a few weeks, you're gunning so hard. You're trying to hit all the targets. And then when you're here, it's like a little more like, yeah, maybe I'll go to Hard Off. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, no, it's true. Like, I actually go to like Akihabara probably less than some of my friends who visit Japan, you know, on an annual basis do. I usually actually end up going to most of these places when they do. But the most important thing about the book, I think, now that Japan's pop cultural star is ascendant again, you have planted your flag. You can say, I was into it before it was cool.
Wow, I never thought about it like that. I'm going to go over the chapters, the table of contents here. We have a section just on Tokyo, wild and wacky places in Tokyo, like the robot restaurant, like the maid cafes, like Akihabara. Then like a section just on otaku culture, just focusing on anime and manga fandom. And we have stuff like on the best otaku shops in Tokyo. We have the animator Terumi Nishii telling us how terrible it is to work in the anime industry while she's working on anime, which is kind of interesting. Section on fashion, Matt. I know you're a bit of a fashion plate.
I'm a clothes horse.
I know you have your polyester Dragon Ball Z shirt. I think I have a picture of you somewhere wearing a Mazinger Z t-shirt made out of like diamonds and rhinestones.
Yes, it's like an illegal Mazinger Z shirt somebody found for me in Hong Kong. It's one of my favorites.
It's like something out of like Tim and Eric's $1 billion movie. Like it cost $1 billion.
I needed to have my teeth covered with like diamonds too in that shot. That's the problem.
So we have a lot of stuff there, like on Harajuku fashion and then like that host club fashion,
right?
Hostess club fashion. So that's kind of like a weird subculture that's kind of not as strong as it used to be, but really did kind of punch a hole in the reality wall in the early 2000s. Those hosts with their crazy hair and their pointy shoes, what were they thinking? Section on music, Matt. I know you're a big fan of Hatsune Miku. I know I've actually driven around with you with someone spinning perfume in the car, and they're in this book too.
This has happened.
I actually used the word city pop, dirty words here somewhere in the table of contents.
Oh, you hater.
And then finally, it comes down to the monsters of the screen, where I'm talking about cult movies, Godzilla movies, Ryuhei Kitamura movies, Yakuza movies, kind of some stuff very similar to my older book, Tokyo Scope.
It is a indispensable guide to Japan as seen from the inside. I think that's really the way you could put it. No, it's very insidery. Do you know what I mean? It's like kind of pro-taku, if you could say that, because you're not the average visitor to Japan. Like, you're hanging out with Ryuhei Kitamura, you know, where, you know, we, in some of these cases, are going to strange places together that most average mortals can't get into. But it's still, I think, kind of told in a very approachable way. It doesn't feel like, I never felt it was humble braggy, like some of these kind of, you know, recollections of experiences that most mortal people don't get to have can be, if you know what I mean? So two thumbs up.
Well, I like the sound of that. Okay. Yeah. What about the cover, Matt? Do you like the cover?
I did. Tell me about the cover. It's groovy. What's up with the cover?
The cover is by this artist, Hiroyuki Mitsume Takahashi, who I've worked with before. We did that anime pilot together, Hypersonic Music Club.
Right.
We've done a lot of stuff together. He's one of my go-to guys for art. And I'm glad we got his work on the cover because it really kind of reflects this sort of colorful, underground, kind of seedy, but kind of exciting kind of Tokyo that the book sort of kind of dives into. But someone left a comment on our YouTube or something, requesting less Godzilla talk, more sleaze. Someone literally did this. Was it Steve Harrison? Was it you, Steve? But yeah, this book has fairly sizable sleaze content if you're looking for that sort of thing. Not my sleaze, other people's sleaze.
Less Godzilla. Yes. This is definitely the right podcast to harangue the hosts about, like, talking about Godzilla less.
Oh, no. But now we're going to have to talk about Godzilla, like, nonstop because it won the Academy Award.
I know.
Oh,
we're never, Lord. Every episode from now on. It's all Godzilla all the time. No, just kidding. We have some fun stuff in the works. We have a couple episodes in the can that need to drop. We have some fun interviews coming up.
Some people have actually agreed to be on the show. So
yes, they
that's
have.
Kind of amazing.
Yeah. No spoilers, Patrick. No spoilers.
Really? Actually. No spoilers?
You can spoil. So I'll spoil. So my old college buddy and partner in crime and so many things, Alexander O. Smith, noted as the translator of many of the even-numbered Final Fantasy games.
Is that like the Star Trek movies, like the even ones or the good ones and the yes, odd exactly. ones and the bad ones?
Yes, we won't get into that, which are even better than odd, bad better than even. But he also happened to translate all of Dr. Slump. Slump. So we're going to have him on and talk a little bit about localization and
poop jokes. Does he know any good poop jokes?
I think there might be a couple of wise cracks in our future.
Oh my gosh. Wow. The Dr. Slump episode, man, I got to like get
back
into that.
You better study up, man. You can study Alex's translations of it.
There's so many things we got to try to cash in on quick. There's Akira Toriyama. There's the Oscars. There's my book. I'm trying to think what's around the
corner. You're already cashing in. Shogun. We have to cash in on Shogun.
What about the Tokyo Olympics, Matt?
Wasn't that the subtitle of your blog is like, can you make a living off of Japanese pop culture? That was like the subtitle of your
blog.
Those
were the good old days, Matt. I mean, that was like 2005. So a lot of the book takes place at the dawn of my career as a day blogger. And I remember back in the day, I mean, I was really inspired by what this guy named Matt Ault was doing. Jon Snow was like a blogger that I really, really was digging on. And of course, W. David Marks, who we've had on the show. Like, you guys were living in Japan. You were documenting your daily lives and your daily obsessions. And we lost some of that magic when we all started like micro-tweeting, you know, micro-blogging.
Yes. And that's the good thing about the kind of fragmentation of the social media sphere into and the rise of newsletters. I think that's actually one of the good things about social media imploding, one of the many good things. But now at least we have newsletters again. But yeah, that kind of like micro-blogging thing where it's like, it's longer than a tweet, but it doesn't have to be this like whole essay like a newsletter has to be. I miss that. And you could just kind of drop random thoughts. You can't really do that in a newsletter as much.
I'm having breakfast. I'm having lunch.
Yeah, exactly.
Watching a movie.
Yes.
Going to bed now. Waking up now.
Here's what I ate. Here's a picture of what I ate. Who is that? We had one of our friends was doing nothing but taking pictures of their plates of food after they'd eaten them. Was that Yoshiki? Can't remember who it was.
Was it Dan or Dave? One of those guys who was taking pictures of traffic cones?
Yes, that's Dan. Yeah, Ceiling Gallery. The Ceiling Gallery blog, Dan and Dave, those guys, that blog, if you can do a search for it, those guys did so many insane deep dives on Japanese, especially Showa culture. Like, they have the biggest write-up I've seen in English on like Morihoshi Daijiro and like all of these mangaka that are legendary here in Japan, but don't really get much attention, and all sorts of like pop cultural characters. Ceiling Gallery, Dan and Dave.
What about Tokyo Damage Report, Schultze?
Yeah, Schultze. You know, it's funny. I met him right before he moved out of Japan. This is years and years ago, and then like we kind of lost touch. But yeah, he was one of the big kind of, what would you call,
I call him an alcoholic, I think, is what I mean.
He was definitely more underground. Like, he was covering sex clubs and stuff like that. And then there was the beginning of the end, that pink tentacle guy who all he did was like scan pictures from books and put them up and monetize them, which kind of like paved the way for like the way that social media would be nothing but people posting other people's content and trying to monetize it.
I'm guilty of that. You know, I do love pictures of dead wrestlers and child actors and, you know, behind the scenes Godzilla photos. It's just so much fun. This is so much fun to share photos of crazy things. I don't know.
It is. But yeah, like RIP also to all of those bloggers who aren't really blogging anymore, but hopefully aren't actually dead. I hope they're actually living like happy lives somewhere, but their blogs are dead.
Flygene, is that what they call them?
Some of them were. Some of them certainly were. There was a big drop off in bloggers for a while there after 2011, which ironically we're recording this on the 13th anniversary of the great Tohoku earthquake and the tsunami. It was 13 years ago. That is
13 years. Wow.
It feels like, you know, if you were here and you remember it, that trauma is kind of residual and memorable. And it does not feel like 13 years like ago at all to me. You know, I'm still living in the same house I was in back then. I still remember crouching down on the deck, like when the shaking got too hard. So yeah, it's a lot of time has gone by. It's crazy. You know, when you're an adult.
And it's all here in my book, Matt. You should check it out. You should pick up a copy right now from your favorite bookstore.
Buy many copies. Buy several copies. Go ahead. Do it.
Stack them. Stack and attack, as they say on Mask. Is that what they said?
No, that was actually Jace and the Wheeled Warriors, Patrick. You're fired. You're fired now. You're no longer, you've lost your... Is this what the Osamu Dazai book No Longer Human was about? When he had his humanity stripped away for forgetting an 80s cartoon reference?
Jace and the Wheeled Warriors, Stack and Attack.
It was written by Americans, but animated by Japanese, as so many things were back then.
Substack and Attack, as I like to say these days. You should check out our newsletters.
Just like you're American, but overwritten by Japanese. I think you could say that. Some percentage of your intellectual DNA is Japanese. Anyway, so congratulations on the book coming out. We're going to pour one out in the curb for the masters of the art form who we've lost, and then drink the rest of the bottle in honor of those creators who have won big at the Academy Awards and elsewhere.
You have to eat the worm this time, though, Matt.
Well, until next next time I'll be chanting on the streets of Argentina, Akira, Akira.
Oh, it's Akira. You supposed to say it like that?
Yes, I think so. I think that is the way in the Streamlined Pictures dub of Akira. It sounds like they're chanting Akira like the Akira manga, but they're actually mean Toriyama Akira. That's the interesting part there.
You can make the good guys better. Armed force,
roll up.
You can make the bad guys badder. Savas,
roll them into battle.
Wheel warriors, quick changing fighting machines.
Approaching. Quick, stack and attack.
You can stack, 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 stack and attack, stack, 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 stack with Wheel Warriors.
Wheel Warriors vehicles each sold separately. Some parts not for use with some toys. New from Mattel.
Well, Matt, that about wraps it up for this episode of the Pure Tokyo Scope podcast. I want to remind everyone to buy my book, buy it, buy my book, buy my book, buy my book, buy my book.
Buy Patrick's book, subscribe to our Substack newsletters, blog.pureinventionbook.com. Just subscribe, hit that, mash that subscribe button like you would a Street Fighter 2 turbo button. Just do it.
And we'll catch you next time with our next episode. Thanks for listening. Bye.